Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 5, delivered on January 29th.
Tonight, financial statements and free cash flow. This is mostly just a formulas-driven kind of thing, but the more important is understanding how and why we adjust accounting statements for the uses of finance. And before I do that, just a quick look at the markets. Sir, good day or bad day on the street? Well, it was good, but not really. It was just almost like a flat day. There was nothing really spectacular. The S&P 500 was down 0.09%, which is really meaningless. That it just was that flat. Same for the Dow, up 0.04% again. And the NASDAQ was up 0.06. So it was a really almost a dead day on the street. Recall that the last time we looked at it, we were in the throes. We had just had a day that was a hard correction. And as I said, you know, those you can't really say, well, that's the end. Here we go into the, you know, the bear market for good. Doesn't work that way. So you can look here at the S&P 500 and look at the 5-day on it, and you can see there was that giant crash day right there. Boom, like that. Well, I shouldn't say crash. It was a heavy down day. But then it bounced around, and then sure enough, it recovered the next day. The bulls are not done. There was an ugly down day. They got they put on their big people's pants, and they came back, the bulls. Now, notice, though, interestingly enough, it has not fully brought back all the value that it lost last week. Rather earlier this week. Last week we were at a high, and then it steeply declined a couple of days, and it's coming back, but it still hasn't recovered to where it was before that hard correction that happened. That is a little bit telling in and of itself that it's kind of hard to say, but the market is still not completely over whatever it was that spooked it a few days ago. And what spooked it a few days ago? Well, the conventional wisdom is it was concern about the coronavirus going from epidemic status to pandemic status. Maybe not, maybe so, maybe not. But whatever was bothering the market, there's still a little bit of concern there. Notice, again, let me bring it back to the 1 day. And you can see you see the volume there? You notice that there's really not any kind of spiking. It's really steady level volume. But as we have seen for a long time now, for nearly a year now, well, no, not that long, 6 months, you notice that today the volume, the total volume of trading on balance volume was less than a third. Was less than two-thirds of what it has been over the last 52 weeks on average. So we're still having that quiet. A lot of the normal trading has kind of faded away, and you have less almost every day. And that is more of a concern to an analyst like me, that the heavies are staying on the sidelines, and they're waiting for the next shoe to drop and letting smaller traders, rebalancing portfolios, that kind of stuff. But the active investors are staying, the heavy investors are staying on the sidelines, as we've seen over and over again for the past 6 months or so. These are the kinds of things that we look at in forecasting overall trends. Now, what does this mean for individual companies? Not a lot in many cases. When you're looking at individual investments, individual companies, individual financial performance, the market really isn't your greatest guide. You've got to dig into the company itself and see what's going on. So we can look at a few companies here just very quickly to see how they did today. A company, well, I don't know, I keep going back to companies like Target. We can look at Target quickly. And this is important to what we're doing today. Notice that Target today, it started here and it just kind of dribbled downward until about just after lunchtime, and then the bulls came in and they grabbed some, but then the bears just came in and they pushed it back down, and by the end of the day it had a fairly steep drop off. See this volume run? You see those bars right there? Those are volume bars. So you see at the end of the day, in the last 30 minutes, 15 minutes of trading, the activity picked up on the stock, and it was generally bears selling out of their positions, readjusting downward on this company. Now, does that mean that it's going to continue tomorrow morning? Who knows? Maybe the bulls will get their mojo together and come in and grab some of the stock because they'll see it's a bargain and they'll buy it, and you'll have a spike on the opening. Maybe not. Maybe the bears are in charge of this stock now. It's hard to tell. Looking at other stocks just to grab some, well, I can have a good laugh with Tesla, the most overvalued stock in history. Sure enough, ran up through the day, more bulls, and finally at the end, the bears had about enough of it, and they dropped it. But right before the bell, here came the bulls back to grab some of the stock at a cheap price, still believing that this thing is going to go. This company is now supposedly the second most valuable auto company in the world, which is amazing considering that it produces very few automobiles, comparatively speaking. And so about everyone who's honest knows very well that it's just going to, sooner or later, it's going to crash. But look at the after-hours trading. You see that? The bulls just are roaring on this thing, buying it hand over fist. And so you just sit there and watch it, enjoy living your life, and wait for some difficult signal that's hard to predict, but you kind of know it's there if you're good at this. Yeah, it's time to play the downside of this stock. And later in the course, I'm going to show you there are a couple of different ways. People think, well, you buy stock and you sell stock. You buy stock to make money off it, then you sell it when you're worried it's going to go down. Actually, there are other ways to make money off a stock that's going down. Selling a stock really doesn't mean anything if you don't have the stock to sell. But there are ways that you can make money off a stock that you think is going to go down in price, even if you don't own that stock. One way is what's called short selling, which hardly anyone outside of finance knows about, and the other way is to use a derivative called a put option to bet on it. So, for example, 2 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, my sentiment was that Walmart was going to go down in price. Okay? I didn't own Walmart, so how could I do anything? Oh, I could, because what I did was I bought a put option that bets a stock the stock was going to crash. Fortunately, I was right. Just earlier today, I saw a stock. I don't want to buy the stock, but I can still bet that it will go up. So in that case, I bought a call option, and we'll talk about these. And I'll show you how to use these if you want to get involved in investments, and I'll even tell you how. And that doesn't mean you go with some rip-off service like Robinhood. There are much more legitimate ways where you don't have to spend a lot of money and all of that. Anyway, looking at just a couple of others, NFLX, I always go back to the same companies. Netflix slid 1.5% today. Again, see that steep drop-off during the day. Look, that's a bear spike. Do you see that volume spike right there? That was the bears coming in to clean up to clean up. And then it popped back up. There was a lot of active volume right there. Notice, by the way, with Netflix, there was more volume on balance volume today than there has been on average over the past 52 weeks. So Netflix was an active stock, as we say. We would say Netflix was active today. And it was like a tug of war. The bears were generally in charge until mid-afternoon, and then the bulls came in and said, moo, and they pushed it up some for the closing. After hours trading, looks like the bears are coming back to slap it around a little bit in the after hours trading. And that, yes, you can trade in after hours markets. Generally speaking, you've got to be a little careful about that, though, because you might, and I'll show you how to put in orders, and that'll come, I think I'll do some of that next week, how you actually order stock, order a buy on stock, and things like that. You got to be careful, though, because if you do it through a typical way, okay, I see right now that Netflix is going down. Okay, I could put in an order right now, but it's not necessarily the case that they would put me into this after hours trading. They might postpone that order until first thing tomorrow morning. Okay, I want to put in a short sell on Netflix because it looks like it's going down. Okay, great. Now, if I get right into the after hours market and it keeps going down, okay, I'm going to make a little money here. But if you don't have them execute your trade until the opening of the official market tomorrow morning, by then, that sell pressure is off and the bulls have come back in and you short sell into an up market and you'll get loose money. So be cautious, and I'll talk about this. Even if you're not a finance major, a lot of you are going to do investments. Why? Because it's fun. And I mean, and it's also, you know, if you make money, well, you feel like a hero, a genius. If you make money, you don't mention it to anyone at all, not even your cats. But anyway, that's the background. That's our context for this. Now, a couple of, just, I don't know. Let me look at a defense stock, LMT, Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin was down. Now, generally speaking, look at that steep drop-off right at the opening bell. Do you see it? Just instantly, the bears were there. And probably some of that was from last night's after-hours market selling pressure, and all of that came together at the opening bell, and the bears just knocked the willies out of that stock. And, of course, then the bulls come in and see that. See the bull spike there? That was the bulls coming in and saying, oh, that's not right. And so they bought in, and then there was another, see this all through here? This was bullish activity, moving the stock back up, trying to get it back above where it had come down. But then the bears, oh, no, you don't. And look at that again. You see that curious thing there? We see that. Look for that pattern. There was, look at all this volume right there at the end. That was bear volume. That was bear work. Because you see how it was pushing that, those trades right in there, that burst of trading activity at the end, that was the bears coming in. And notice that the bears were not very satisfied. Well, now it's gotten right back to flat. But, I mean, the bears probably weren't satisfied. There was still some selling into the after-hours market. But right now, it's just kind of like, it closed at 433.84, and the after-hours market right now is flat right there. So what does that mean? Very quickly, though, notice again, we have highly active stock compared to what's happened on average every day over the past 52 weeks. Today was a more significant day, 1.2 million today versus about 1.1 million. For the typical day. So this was, again, another active stock. Some people look for active stocks. They see those as more of a play. Okay, there's something going on. I don't know what it is, but I'm in. Others, somewhat more like my investment strategy, I look for stocks where they're being ignored because that's when the price can get begin to settle back down, And I figure, okay, just hold the stock and see if some people suddenly get interested, and then it goes active after I've already put my position in, short or long. Now, that's another one. When I say long, I mean you're buying. Okay, you're going long, that means you're buying. If you're going short, you're selling the stock. Now, I can even mean if I say I am going short such and such a stock, that means that not necessarily I'm selling, I am actually short selling. I am borrowing stock, selling it at the market, and then when the stock drops, I buy it back and give it back to where I borrowed it from, and I pocket the difference. That's short selling. It's not put up here on services like Yahoo, but there are places where you can see short interest. That means you are looking at how many people are doing short sells. And that's one of the deficiencies of looking just at Yahoo. It doesn't tell you this kind of interesting stuff. Enough of that. Now, for the part of this lecture where I'm telling you, here's how we look at financial statements. The accounting can take us only a little ways toward what we care about in finance. We care about the health of a corporation, not about the numbers that the rules tell the accountants they have to put down. So in other words, we have to adjust for things. Okay. First things first. In accounting, there are costs that we really don't care all about. But accountants, it's not because they're evil or something, they have to recognize these costs that really don't exist. Specifically, they have to, in some cases, they happened, but that was yesterday or last month. And that doesn't tell us anything about what's going to happen. Well, it doesn't tell us a lot about what's going to happen next. You could have a great run in a company, but underneath the company is corrupted and rotted. A great example of that is Tesla. Tesla, if you look at its stock and you look at its basic accounting numbers, it doesn't look bad at all. But if you dig down, you find out that this company is in terrible shape. It's in such bad shape that we can't actually calculate something like free cash flow for it. So let's go back to the old saying. When this fellow was hired, he's famous for turning companies around. And they brought him in, the board of directors, to save their company. He said, "Gentlemen, I can make this company profitable every year right to the time we close the doors in bankruptcy." In other words, you can have a company look profitable on the financial statements, but if you look underneath, this company is basically dead, and it's just flopping there. And on the other hand, sometimes a company looks really bad on paper, but the company is actually pretty darned healthy underneath the accounting statements, or at least it is in a lot better shape. Many times companies will use tax things to, to make the company's taxable income low so they don't have to pay a lot in income taxes. That's a common thing to do. We will make a company once in a while, okay, we're going to get hit with, we got high pre-tax income, but actually we can recognize these write-offs to bring down the actual taxable income and therefore pay less taxes with it. Or we can acquire a company that has all of these losses that they can't recognize because they're already losing money. But if we bring that company in here, we can take their losses and put them on our books, and that cuts our taxable income down. We need to get past all of that. We have got to see the actual health of the company. Yeah. You, madam, you are nearly dead, but you every morning you give yourself a shot of adrenaline straight into your heart. And you come to class looking perky. But and so I look at, well, that's a very perky person. I mean, my God, she answers questions. She's brilliant. Well, I don't realize that as soon as you leave here, that adrenaline lays off and you, Night of the Living Dead. The same thing with you, sir. You're actually not very healthy. You live a very unhealthy lifestyle. But I mean, after you've had a giant meal at Chick-fil-A, 3 sandwiches and 2 orders of waffle fries, and then you go over to Red Robin and have one of those giant double cheeseburgers with the egg on top and the bacon, that is a meal. And then you have all you can eat fries and all you can drink root beer floats. Well, yeah, you're going to be perky. I feel pretty. But I know that you are the textbook example of a heart attack that will happen down the road. We've got to do something about this. We can't look at companies. We've got to dig in. So in other words, I'm going to essentially open your heart up. Ooh, there's cholesterol. Yeah. Okay, I got to look inside. Okay, that's what we do in finance. We've got to look inside. And for you, there's another payoff to this too, because you are going to go out there and get one of those things called a career, and you're going to get jobs. You're going to be offered jobs, and you're going to apply for jobs. It doesn't hurt you to study the company's financials. In case you can show that you know some things about the company in an interview, that's always great, but it can also tell you, is this a long-term good idea for me, this company? Because if that company is showing real weakness in its free cash flow, sooner or later that company is going to start getting rid of employees to save its butt. And the last people in are going to be the first people it gets rid of to make the Wall Street boys happy. Keep that in mind. This isn't just for stock analysis. It's for life analysis as well. And if you decide you're going to run a business, you really need to know your free cash flow. Profit, well, wonderful. You can brag about if you're profitable. But once you close those doors to your office, you want to see, am I okay here? In a case like mine, I've told you this before, I own a company. It's called Emergent Light Studio Incorporated, Inc. And I'm profitable every year. My free cash flow is horrible. I mean, it is like it's handball on the curb. I mean, it's amazing that it's still alive. And if I were smart, I would have walked away a long time ago. But I can brag, yeah, I'm profitable, I'm cool. But I know damn well that's not the case. I've got to figure out what I can do to bring free cash flow back into line. That's what we're aiming at tonight. First things first. Let me pull a company up here, something. Okay, by the way, in the scrolling marquee on my podcasting site, I've given you the link to this Edgar filing system here. And you might want to bookmark that. You can always navigate it right here. SEC.gov, that'll take you right there. Just bookmark that site, because that's where you can just type in a ticker symbol and get the company's financials. And as I said, this is original source. Nothing you go to will give you this information as the primary, unless you're going here, because they're all using this. And that's what professionals do. Whether you're a finance professional or a professional in some other area of business, original source is always better than something that is maybe easier to get to or more popular or faddish. So I'm going to type in, I don't know, Kellogg. Yeah, I'll look at Kellogg. Notice the notice all the different forms. You kind of look at these. If you're looking for specialized information, beneficial ownership, the SC-13G. Now, if you see a /A, that's an amendment. You filed it and something was wrong and you file again. Or you file it and the SEC bitches at you, then you file an amendment. If you see a 10K slash A, you probably should go to that one because it probably is that there was some defect in the financials in the original 10K filing. And so you would want to use the 10KA instead of the original 10K for your analysis. Just keep that in mind. Now, as you can see, there's 8Ks. Those are notices of non-recurring events. You've got the Qs. They've already pumped out their Qs, so they are coming up on a K. I thought maybe they'd already have their K out, but they haven't yet. Here's the 10K. So in other words, this was the last fiscal year, and now they've done a Q and a Q and a Q, and now they're about to file the big K again. They've got a fiscal, probably it's a calendar year, fiscal year. So it'll probably come out sometime in February or maybe early March, the K will. But we'll look at the K for the time being just so I can get full numbers. We will look at the K. Where the hell was the K? Oh, there it is. Okay. Now, if you want to read the original document, I'm going to repeat what I said the last time. This is the original, actual, the paper itself with all of the information. This, by the way, notice this, that you're going to get your actual legal address of the firm. You would be surprised at the number of times when in classes or in some other circumstance, you will be asked, what is the address of this corporation? This is the address of the corporation. What you would see on their website might not be that address. It might be their offices where they want people to come to see them and all that kind of stuff. This one is the legal address. Also, this is the legal name of the corporation. A lot of times companies will use a shortened version of their name for one purpose or another. A DBA, a doing business as. So for example, I will call my company Emergent Light Studio. That is not its legal name. That is actually its trademark name, but the legal name is Emergent Light Studio, comma, Inc., I-N-C, period. And a lot of companies have sort of like an informal name everyone knows them by, and it might surprise you. What the actual name? I'm going to do something here real quick. Let me back up here. WMT. I think that's Walmart's symbol. Yeah. Let me show you something interesting here. People spell Walmart different ways. The company, for a long time, spelled it W-A-L-M-A-R-T. And you might stumble in that and think, well, that looks more like the real name. Go to the 10-K. Because if you file a false statement with the SEC, they will spank you. So this is the original stuff. And remember what I told you, another thing about this, too, is down here, this is the document itself, that item 7, the management discussion and analysis of financial condition and results of operations. We call that the MD&A. This is the company telling its honest story. It's filing with the SEC. It is going to be read by the Wall Street heavies. It is not going to lie. It is going to try to create trust by saying what are the facts. PR may do other things. Our public relations, our press releases, we can say other things there. But here we are disclosing to the people who can put us in prison on one side, the government, and crash our stock through the ground and down to the core of the earth on the Wall Street side. So we are as honest and open as we can be in the MD&A. That's why this, if you're researching a company, just open this up and read it. You know, I not even want to watch, look, well, I better calculate these numbers. Don't do that. Just read the stupid words and look at what they say about these. It's not the numbers, it's what they say. Okay, we're going to analyze what we just showed you here in numbers. We're going to tell you why this happened, what it means. It's worth it for you to do that. Okay, I've griped at you enough about that. Let me go back here. What was the company that I did? What was it? What? Kellogg. Okay, yeah, Kellogg. Thank you. Whew. Okay, Kellogg. Okay, we're going to go down here to the K. Not very current, but here it is. And I keep jumping right over. Interactive. Enough of... Okay, I could download the Excel document. I can just tear it apart, add sheets, do calculations, stuff like that. But here are the financial statements. Now, first things first, I'm going to do this. View the Excel document. And I'm going to save the file. And then, well, this version of this web browser doesn't show it to you, so I'll have to find it in the downloads. Did it actually download? Huh. Downloaded with an odd name, with a name that didn't really help me. Okay, anyway, let me pull this up here. Is this, tell me I've got Kellogg, yeah, I've got Kellogg, okay. Now, this is a summary front sheet. One thing that is kind of like an old thing that we do sometimes is we delete a lot of the sheets that we're not going to use, and that clears up the clutter. So in other words, I would probably delete the document. And then I'd go back here and find a whole pile of these ridiculous, all these other statements that I'm not going to use, like the notes to the financial statement, accounting policies, I'll probably, and then I might just run clear to the end. No, I don't want that one. Shoot, I screwed that up. Let me go clear back here to the beginning. And I'm going to take this one. Let me take this one out. Delete that sheet. Yes. Stop griping at me. Now, I'm going to go back here, and I'm just going to clear out all these ones that I'm not going to use for this. In one fell shot, Venezuela, why didn't that one pick up? Accounting. See if I got them. And I'm doing this just for the sake of uncluttering so that I can do some stronger analysis. Now, I won't spend too much time on this little part right here that I'm looking at, but really? Good grief. Kellogg, good grief. What do they do? Do they sell cereal on other planets too? Well, this is entertaining, but we've got to move on with the stupid lecture. I'm sorry I even did this, but finally, we get to Venezuela. Okay. And then right-click. Delete. Yes. Finally. Wow. Okay. Now, a couple of things to show you here, and now I'll do this again a little later in the semester when we do ratio analysis and stuff like this. But one thing that we typically like to try to do is we'll add a couple of columns, like insert a column here and insert a column here. Now, the reason we do this is so that we can do something really important. And I'm going to give you a formula right now. It's not a hard formula, but it's a formula. We don't, as I mentioned before, we don't care about actual numbers. So, well, we care about them if they're negative, but we care more about percentage changes in numbers. So we do this quick, dirty little calculation. The percent change is going to be the ending value over the beginning value minus 1. And then, times 100% to turn it into a percentage. This allows us two things. It tells us growth rate, and it also allows us to compare companies of different scales. So if you've got a Kellogg whose revenues go up by, let's say, $1 billion, well, that's a big difference from a company that is half the size of Kellogg having revenues go up by $1 billion. When we turn everything into percent changes, then we can compare companies much better, as well as see more, have more insight. So in other words, what I would do here is on this Excel sheet, and by the way, please bring your computers on Monday. If you can open it, your computers now if you want and follow along. But on Monday, we will be doing some Mad Excel skills that I want you to know how to do. So please have your computers and your Excel, unless you have a Mac, and I'm sorry you have one. If that's, but I shouldn't be. Yes, I should. Okay, so we'll do end minus the beginning. Oops, not minus, I'm sorry. End divided by beginning. There's another way to write this formula. Divided by beginning minus 1. And then I will turn that into a percentage, format the cells, and I want that to be a percentage, and I want, usually, every place you work, I swear, they'll have their own rules. Well, numbers you should report to 2 decimal places, 4, 6, whatever. Typically, and it's called the house rules. You just figure out what it is. I'm going to do 2 decimal places as a house rules here, and then I can just honk these down. And that one's going to be a divisor of 0 because the beginning value was 0. Now I'm going to do the same formula over here. I'm going to say equals ending value minus the beginning, divided by the beginning value, minus 1. And again, I will format the cells. Format the cells, and I'll put that as a percentage to 2 decimal places. And then I'll take this down. I don't want to waste a lot of time on these little formulas here. Drag this one down. Okay, wonderful. Okay, so now, this tells us more. See how Kellogg actually had a slight dip, almost a percent drop in revenues from fiscal 16 to 17. But then it had a nice recovery, 5.39%. That's a little bit more. And then I can say, okay, cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold went up a little bit, but then it went up more strongly in fiscal 2018. That kind of concerns me that their revenues grew by 5.39%, but their cost, the wholesale cost, increased by more than that. That's not a good sign right there. Now, I'm going to bring up something else. I had mentioned it in the last lecture. The SEC used to have very strict standards for what numbers were presented and what you called those numbers. That's no longer the case. There's a line right here that we really are interested in, and some companies still do it, but a lot of companies don't report it here. So I'm going to put it in here, insert. This is called the gross income, or you will hear it now called the gross profit. Do not call it the gross margin. A lot of companies call it gross margin. That's not what it is. But that is actually the revenues equals the revenues minus the cost of goods sold. Okay? And then I can do the percent changes on that. I should have done that before now. Whoops. Okay, let's grab the handle, drag it. Now, what this means is this number, gross income, is how much of every dollar that went into the, how much of the money that went into the cash drawers survived the wholesale cost. So in other words, in this year right here, of $12,854,000,000 that came in as revenue to the company, almost $4.7 billion survived the wholesale. We care about that. In the previous year, of the in the next year, of $13.5 billion, $4.7 survived wholesale cost. Now that's a little concerning to me because their revenues went up strongly, and yet their cost of good, their gross margin didn't go up hardly at all. Do you see how their gross income, the revenue gives you a false impression? The revenue here went up from fiscal 17 to fiscal 18. Went up 5.4%. But their actual what survived wholesale barely farted upward. About 0.5%. That is concerning. In other words, they were having uncontrolled cost pressure at the wholesale. In other words, they were not able to pass along wholesale costs efficiently in this year, fiscal 2018. They couldn't do it. In other words, their actual gross income eroded. They couldn't, in other words, this revenue would have to have gone up more in order to have survived their cost of goods sold going up more. These are the things that we look at, and we'll do more of this in the next few lectures on ratio analysis and all those kinds of things. In this lecture, we're kind of focusing on more of the big picture here. And the big picture talks about things like the accountants say net income, profit. We don't really care about that. The first thing that we're going to do here is I'm going to write a couple of formulas on the board. They're not hard formulas. They're just formulas. Okay. First things first. There are things in the income statement that we don't care about. Now, it used to be the case that companies had to disclose the depreciation expense. They don't do it anymore here. They hide it in the statement of cash flows. We used to have it right here where we could see because depreciation expense is not real. You will never write a check to depreciation expense. It doesn't exist. Give you an example, and I think I already did this example in my own company. I spent $4,500 on equipment. That was $4,500 right out of the company's account. I'm not allowed to show that. I cannot show what really happened. I have to divide that up into 5 years and recognize, well, in straight line, a fifth of that every year. Which is, in other words, that depreciation expense is a lie. What really happened was not $900 a year for 5 years, if I'm straight lining. What really happened was $4,500. So the first thing I'm going to have to do is add back the depreciation and amortization because it didn't happen. Unfortunately, now companies don't show it. It's happening. It's probably right there in selling, general, and administrative expenses, but it's not being shown there. But it's in there, and I'd have to go over to the statement of cash flows to pick off the number. So I'm most decidedly not really going to want that depreciation expense in there. Another thing that I'm going to have to worry about is, realistically, that interest expense right there, that's kind of like, we look at that separately because you're going to pay that one way or the other. We can analyze that, but in terms of the ability of the company to pay all of its bills, which is what we care about, interest expense is just another bill we look at the end of the story. In other words, we really are not going to care too much about this. So the first thing we have to do is make an adjustment. We look at something called NOPAT. This is net operating profit after taxes. NOPAT. Now, if you go in, and I'm going to spend a little time showing you how to look at Standard & Poor's 500 global, Standard & Poor's global net advantage. I'm going to show you how to look at it. It's got numbers, so many numbers, it's just ridiculous. However, one thing they show, and they know darn well they have to show it because financial people care about this, they show NOPAT. NOPAT's a heavy. Basically, NOPAT is earnings before interest and taxes times 1 minus the tax rate. This word, see this right here? Some companies call this EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. It can also be called operating income. Notice we had gross income. Right there. No. There it is. Up operating. Oh, God.
Getting green looking, my feeling in my eyes.
Okay. See it there? Operating profit. It can be called. A company can call it earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT, operating profit, operating income. It can carry a lot of different names, which drives us crazy nowadays because it was like 3 years ago, I put a financial statements on an exam and I said, and I didn't look carefully and the poor kids were just confused because they said, well, how do I do the NOPAT? And I said, it's right there. And then I realized they had some really weird name for operating income, EBIT. And I didn't catch it that it can have a lot of different names. Okay, so anyway, that's NOPAT, okay? In other words, we stop at where they have paid their wholesale costs, where they have paid their company operating bills, the operating bills. We don't include the interest expense, mainly because it's not an operating expense. It is just there. It's not making the paying that interest expense doesn't make the company do anything. Paying you your salary, sir, you work, you do something. Paying you, the electric company, I keep my lights on. But, so in other words, we do care about the SG&A. That's fine there, except we have to peel off the depreciation expense. But we don't care about the interest expense because it's not operating. And what we care about is this company going to be able to pay its bills this period. So the next thing we go to is we attack the core. We take the NOPAT, and we go down. We just drill it down to free cash flow, FCF. One of these has to work. Free cash flow. Free cash flow. Free cash flow. And I'll show you how to do this. Just write this down. If you've got Excel, just do it with Kellogg or some other company. I mean, with Excel, it's a lot easier these days.
Because once you've created your model, you can apply it to different companies. Free cash flow. We're going to take the NOPAT. And then we're going to add back depreciation and amortization, which you're going to have to get from the statement of cash flows. These are things that beneficially operate. But then we take out two animals. We take out the actual capital expenditures and we take out the change in net operating working capital. And I'll explain that one next to you. These are bleeds on cash flow. That $4,500, that is what I put there because it bled my cash flow $4,500. That $900 I put on my income statement is meaningless. So I'm going to add that back. But then I'm going to take out what actually happened. This one is a little subtler. This is essentially, well, let me do this. First of all, net working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. Now, write this down because okay, net operating working capital says look at only the operating current assets and liabilities. Now, what does that mean in practice? There's a lot of argument. Some things that are in the current assets, some people would say are operating. Some would say, well, those don't really do anything. Like prepaid insurance shows up as a current asset. Is that really an operating expense, or is that sort of like just there? And there are a couple of others, too, and in the liability side, current liability side. For the most part, your homework problems, really there won't be any current assets that aren't operating, and there won't be any current liabilities that are not operating. In other words, net operating working capital will be the same as net working capital. That's just the bottom line. In practice, though, it can get a little bit hairy sometimes. I kind of just, personally, I just use net working capital and take that as the same as net operating working capital. Okay, now, the change in net operating working capital is the net operating working capital current now minus the net operating working capital one period back. I'll explain what this means. You see, if current assets go up, but current liabilities don't, that actually hurts cash flow. Think about this. And I told you I referenced my own company just to try to make it real. I will produce, let's say, 8 major works of art. And I get the print in this high, expensive print, and then it's dry mounted, then mat is put on, frame is put on, museum glass is put on. Okay, that cost me real money. I paid the framers to do this. But I can't put that on my income statement. That's not an expense. That becomes inventory. The actual process of doing a 24 by 16 professional quality that can be exhibited in an art gallery or at an art show
will run me about, let's say, for a modest piece, $250. I actually don't put that in my expenses in the income statement. That just increases my inventory by $250. Only when I sell it does it go off inventory to cost of goods sold. So when I sell that piece for, let's say, $900, then I can take it away from the inventory and put it into my cost of goods sold. So in other words, when current assets pop, like go up like mine do, that's cash, that's a negative cash flow. That's killing me. So in other words, if my inventory goes up on average for a year, net, my net goes up from, let's say, an inventory of $5,000 to an inventory of $6,200, that means my net operating working capital went up if there's no change in current liabilities. So that represents an actual drain on my cash flow. That's why we have that look at changes in net operating working capital. On the other hand, let's take it this way. In the current year, I will have a bill just at the end of December. I had a bill that I owed for a professional organization. It was $500. Okay? I recognized that $500 on my current liabilities, but I didn't pay it until just about a week and a half ago. So the fact that my current liabilities went up means that I actually saved myself cash flow. We delay paying bills, and we do that as a passion. I'll give you a bigger, more important example. I was at a dinner, it was about a year and a half ago, and it was some executives of a large company that's based in Chicago, and a couple of my students had gotten jobs there, and they were laughing about one of the people who was the boss of that one of my students. Here's what had happened. They got a payment in to Treasury, came in on some contract for $6 million. Wonderful. Well, immediately, the guy who runs their accounts payable saw that $6 million and cleared his books of close to $4 million in bills that had come in right away. And of course, then the chief financial officer eats his heart out. Why did you do that? Because they were bills. When were these bills due? Well, there was one due in 2 weeks, and we had one that we had less than a month left to pay. Are you out of your freaking mind? No, you don't pay those bills until you have to. Well, I believe it. I don't care what you believe. You killed our free cash flow. We had a bill. We didn't have to pay it. And yet you righteous son of a bitch, you paid the thing. That is cash flow control. It's called cash management. And we delay paying bills as long as we can, and we try to get our payments for things as fast as we can. Another good example of this is accounts receivable. Just a couple of years ago, I started taking payments for some of my art. Half down, you pay half now, and you pay the remainder over the next 3 months. Nice agreement. Okay, wonderful. I sell an artwork for, an example, $1,200. Okay, wonderful. Okay, the person pays me $600 and then pays $200 a month for the next 3 months. Good. That's wonderful. On my income statement, I have to recognize revenue of $1,200. See? So I didn't get any $1,200. You lie. That wasn't 12. I got 600. So in other words, I have to adjust the profit that an accountant would say to reflect the fact that
my accounts receivable went up by $600. In other words, $1,200 got drained through net operating working capital by $600. That's why we do this, because we don't care what the rules say. We care what actually happened to our cash flow. So in this case, just to stop bitching about this for a while and show you how you do this, let me find the balance sheet real quick here. Okay, so first of all, let me do something here. I'm going to do NOPAT. N-O-P-A-T, NOPAT. And then here, I'm going to do free cash flow. Okay, NOPAT. That will be nothing but equals... Oh, mother's work is never done. Where was that stupid thing? EBI, there it is, right there. Equals that. Times 1 minus the tax rate. Now, alternately, you can just minus the income taxes right here. The book and a lot of academic exercises take 1 minus the company's marginal tax rate. Now, a tax act that was passed shortly after the 2016 elections, once the current president was in power and the party in power was other than what it had been, corporate tax rates were dropped phenomenally. The top marginal corporate tax rate used to be 39%, and it was progressive, but now it is all flat at 21%. That is the marginal tax rate for corporations now in place. That also explains why we are running $1 trillion budget deficits. We basically cut out half of the revenue we're taking in taxes as a government. That's not my problem. That's your problem, because you're going to be on the hook to pay off those $1 trillion year over year over year budget deficits someday. But again, that's your problem, not mine. I'm happy. Okay? So there's NOPAT right there. And then I can copy that formula, Control C, and then I just click that, hold down Control, and put it there and there. Paste. Okay? And then I can even put this, Control C, Control V, Control C, Control V. So now I can see NOPAT has actually done pretty well. That's our first metric. Okay? Now I'm not as worried as I was before. Do you see how NOPAT? Now, free cash flow is a little bit more of a pain in the butt. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to stick in a line here. Okay, insert. Now, what I'm going to do is find net operating working capital. Now, what I'll do is I'll go over to the balance sheet, and I can do that for only 1 year here, unfortunately, because these, you can get more in the K itself. Really? Okay, but what I'll do is I'm going to come back over here and I'll get my, come on, really? Okay, net operating working capital. I'm going to say that will equal the current assets minus the current liabilities for this year. Okay, current assets equals current assets minus current liabilities for the current year. You just have to be careful, and I'm so bad at this sometimes. Minus the current assets minus the current liabilities for the previous year. God, I should make these bigger so I don't do this. Minus the current assets minus the current liabilities for the previous year. Close parentheses. Boom. And there's your Uncle Bob. Now, I can't do this for the previous because I have only 2 years. Now, finally, free cash flow. And just write down these and play with it in Excel. We'll do some more of this on Monday. But what I basically want to do is I'm going to take basically the NOPAT equals the NOPAT. Plus, now I've got to find that stupid depreciation and amortization, which I'm going to have to go over here to the statement of cash flows and look for it there. There it is, right there. You see it? Got it. Okay, so that adds that. Now we're going to subtract, and I'm going to put in the capital expenditures. I'm still going to stay on the free cash flows because I'm going to find them down here someplace. Someplace in here, investing. Generally speaking, I mean, it's probably going to be right here. Addition to properties, I'm probably going to use this one. It's really hard to say what to use here. And then I'm going to also add in the change in net operating working capital, which was right here. Plus, I probably did this wrong, and I'll probably regret it, but free cash flow, net operating working capital, close the parentheses, and this is going to tell us, this number will tell us the real story of Kellogg. What the hell? Really? You know what? Will someone tell me why my perfectly good formula minus depreciation and amortization.
Plus.
Oh, plus, you're right. I'm just testing you to see if you're watching. Plus, where the hell is the rest of it? I am so confused right now that I can't find my own butt using both hands in a Rand McNally Road Atlas. There, okay, that was, where was, no, NOPAT. There was the depreciation. Where, minus, why the hell do I have that there? Screw it. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.